Welcome to the Rams Review Podcast. Discussion, insights, interviews, and analysis. All passion, all Derby Kent. Hello, everybody, and welcome to one of the final episodes of the season of the Rams Review Podcast. We've given it a little bit of breathing space since last Sunday's. Was it last Sunday? Do you know what? The days just melt into one at the minute.
The dramatic final day.
Yeah. So we let it breathe. We've decided to wait and do the end our end of the season a week late. So
it's kind of like when you come home from the gym, Jason, and you have to let your stinky shoes air out a little bit to so you can put them on again. We just decided to do that. Let all the dust settle. Emotions were running high, so we decided to do that. But as has become tradition on the podcast, Jason. Jack is with us on the podcast, and I apologize for my absence in recent weeks. I have seemed to have become the last few weeks the James Chester of the podcast, making very few cameo appearances. But I was across the country in sunny California looking at earthquake simulations and was unable to join. But Jason, as I said, what has become a tradition on this podcast for the season review episode is joining us is the BBC Sports presenter. And this year it's Dominic Dietrich. Dom, welcome back to the podcast. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you very much for having me.
For the first time, before we get into the questions, somewhat very briefly, because I'm going to talk to you about this at the end a little bit. In a couple of sentences, your first season at the BBC at Sports Scene, how's it been? Has it met your expectations, exceeded your expectation? What's it like working with Ed Dawes and on all that stuff?
Well, I could go on for hours about working with Ed. It's been great. It's been something I don't take for granted, and it's something I've strived for a long time. And to finally do it, it took about three quarters of the season to really sink in that it was actually happening. And it's been an absolute honour and a pleasure, but just unfortunate that the Rams couldn't get that promotion on the or at least get in the playoffs on the final day. But no, it's been a roller coaster. But to be honest, off the back of what had happened the previous 2 years, I think it was quite calm all in all.
Yeah, it's like one of those kiddie roller coasters that you get at, I guess, Goose Fair, they could call it. Although that's the other side of the other county we don't like to talk about. And Dom, when we were talking to schedule this, I had said to Jason, I was like, Dom's just agreed to come on. And Jason Robacki's like, Christ, I hope I don't have to talk to him for a couple more weeks. And no disrespects, Dom, you're a nice enough guy. But I was like, yeah, I could do with, you know, talking to Dom 2 weeks from now. But alas, you're here and we're very pleased to have you. Jason, I think it's worth mentioning because the season ended kind of dramatically. It kind of began kind of the same way with the takeover of David Clowes. And if we hearken our mindset back to the beginning of the season where we started with the five players, Liam Rossini's leadership. It kind of grew from there, didn't it? I mean, Liam was making these signings. He had met Conor Curahane in a Costa Coffee and talked about different things that he wanted to do with the club. And he was able to bring in players like David McGoldrick. And, you know, Jason, a few moments on Liam Rossini, because he was the one who really kind of set the stage for the season where Derby didn't necessarily pull up trees and didn't necessarily tread water. We were kind of in a strange space here at the title of interim manager, but kind of Jason, your thoughts on Liam Rossini at the beginning of the part of the season.
It's one of those, isn't it? Like you say, we hark back to 12, well, not quite 12 months ago, but not far off 12 months ago. We were staring down the barrel of a pretty big shotgun, I think it's fair to say. Didn't know what the future was going to hold for the football club in any respects. And then, yeah, those things get sorted out. And whilst it was a massive task, and it was going to be a massive task for anybody, I was, at the time, and probably even more so now, looking back at it, quite confident and happy with the person who'd kind of been given the reins. Now, we know he'd got no massive managerial experience. We know that. It was his first thing. But Liam Rossini has been, what, finished his career 10... It must be about 10 years. And he's still been in and around the game for those 10 years as a pundit, as a coach, as whatever. So he'd learnt the right way. One of the main things, not just us, I know a lot of people were saying when he got given the job, that, you know, he speaks such a good game of football, and it was always going to be how could his mindset and how could his theorems transpire onto a football pitch. And I think anybody, lads, let's be honest, anybody who's just taken over a football mat, football team, and been given the reins and then gone, right, by the way, you've got to sign about 15 players. I mean, we're talking fantasy football sort of thing, aren't we? With a legitimate football club of one of Derby County's ilk. I mean, that's amazing. And I must admit, I looked at it and thought, yeah, okay, they could be better managers out there for him to for that job to happen. But at the end of the day, everything that Liam sort of stood for from what we saw him as an assistant under Wayne and under Philip and things like that, you thought to yourself, you know what? Actually, we might not be under bad hands here if he can get it right. And you look back to that summer, Dom. I know this was obviously a little bit before you kind of fully got in, wasn't it? But just the way that things started happening, as we said at the time, the names that started appearing, the names that started coming through the door, the signings that we made, all of a sudden, as Derby fans do, that expectation all of a sudden just ramped up again, and it was like, you know, this team could walk Division One, the League One. Obviously, we'll go on to it. Hasn't worked out that way, but I don't know what more Liam Rossini could have done with what he had. I really don't, and I honestly don't know of many other managers or coaches or whatever you want to call them who hung around like he had. He'd been, let's be honest, we try and talk straight on this. He'd been slapped in the face the year
Yeah,
previous when Wayne
more
came
than
in.
once, more than once, because it was
And
after
he
Kaku
was
got sacked, and then Rooney got it, and then
exactly,
he got the interim title and everything like that.
yeah. He'd
And
been
I
slapped
think,
in the face.
yeah, and I think what you said there, Jason and Dom, this is what we want to ask you is, like Jason, I was very content with life under Liam Rossini. I thought, you know what, decent young manager, well thought of in the game. We're doing okay. Were we doing great? No, but we have a lot of players, and that you could see the team was going to eventually start to put things together. And then you kind of look back and you're like, wow, you know, what a transformation, a management shift made. You know, the new manager Pounce kind of lasted almost all season. I mean, how would you sum it up, Dom, with Liam Rossini as a fan and as someone who was commentating on the games? Were you content with Liam Rossini with the direction Derby were going? I mean, he obviously did well at Hull in the championship, so he's obviously got some sort of pedigree. I mean, were you generally happy with it?
Well, look, Liam did a great job under the circumstances, but his appointment was something of a necessity at the time, and it was an opportunity for him. And whilst I think he may have missed out on opportunities before, I think Derby County gave him a very good opportunity that going into a club the magnitude of Derby to take on the project at the time and place that it was in. So he took that on board, and he did very well for the start. And then I think there was a regression in performance. I think they did slip away. I think teams figured out potentially how to beat Liam Rossini's side. And I think there were some looks of confusion from players when they were playing under Rossini, sort of Hayden Roberts being asked to play as an inverted fullback. And he was trying to, I think Liam Rossini was trying to impart his philosophy on Derby, as if it was a Brighton where he had worked for the years before. He had come under the tutorship of Graham Potter and seen how he established things. And I just think he tried to do too much too soon in terms of that. He tried to change the wheel, and he went for this approach. And look, you've got to remember, there wasn't a goal away from home before he lost his job. They were struggling at home as well to get victories. You think of the final game against Wickham, whilst they got the result in the end, it was Conor Hourihan that really bailed them out of that one. But yeah, he was brilliant at talking to us. His knowledge of the game was outstanding. He was a true gentleman on and off the pitch as well. But look, I think David Clowes and Derby County saw Paul Warne as their man. And I think they always knew that inside their head that they wanted him. And unfortunately, Liam Rossini was the victim of that. But look, he's clearly had an opportunity with a blank canvas at Derby to show what he can do as the manager to other football clubs. And that's exactly why Hull City appointed him. So I think he'll look back on the Derby stint as a huge moment in his career in the future because it gave him the platform.
And like you say there, Dom, I think one of the games that stands out for that, I think it was it the draw away at Cecil Bank, or was it a loss at Cecil Bank that Derby was
Defeat.
so
No, they
poor?
got
It was a
hammered.
defeat. And then that was kind of like, you could kind of see like, wait a minute here, we're struggling to beat Lincoln away from home. And then, like you said, the Wickham game, and they made the decision to go with Paul Warren.
I think, look, that defeat away at Cecil Bank wouldn't have been the only thing that changed his fortune at Derby County. But that's when the words stopped landing as comfortably as they had been for Liam Rossini when he was coming out and trying to justify.
Was it not Plymouth the Saturday before? Was it the Plymouth game the week before?
Yeah,
before the Lincoln game, wasn't it? I think.
Yeah. So that it didn't really do him many favours, and I think he openly said to us on BBC Radio Derby, he said, "I'm asking them to play a complicated way. I know it's very complicated, but with time it'll come." And I think once you start sending messages like that out, it's not great for a fan base to keep them sort of reliant on what you're doing. But I have to say, at the timing of it, during the international break, wasn't it? I didn't see it coming. I didn't see a new manager going into the club or head coach, and it just so happened that they got their opportunity and they took it.
And like you say there, Dom, so, you know, Paul Warren rolls up from Rotherham, and he was kind of somebody, to be honest with you, they said Paul Warren at Rotherham, and I thought, Rotherham don't really play good football. Who the hell is Paul Warren? You know what I mean? That was kind of the you kind of expected Derby of previous years to get someone with a little bit more experience, with someone with a little bit of a bigger name. And he kind of rolled up and he had his bobble hat on and he went to the store and he bought it and he was given these quotes and you're kind of like, this is different. Where is this guy coming from and whatever. And it took a while. I wouldn't say I'm still not fully convinced. The jury is still out for me. I mean, obviously it's getting progressively. The jury is becoming more and more in here. We've got like 10 of the 12 jurors in the box right now. And it'll be interesting to see what he does this offseason. But I mean, he really took to this club, didn't he, Dom? Like a fish to water. I mean, it was like the transformation of the football club. Well, I wouldn't say it was instantaneously overnight. Within 3 or 4 weeks, the football club, kind of the atmosphere, the expectations of the fans, everything seemed to be completely different, didn't it?
And I think you often hear it when you speak to people in football that owners' sort of philosophies and morals and things like that are often reflected by the managers that they choose. And I think Paul Warren and David Clowes, the way he's a local businessman, Derby fan all his life in the North Stand, he gets what football is about, and he's not just been there for the shining lights, he's been there through it all. Paul Warren came with humility, came with modesty, and he's come into the job where he knows it's an opportunity. He speaks about, of course, his late father, and how proud he would be to see him walk out and manage the same club as Brian Clough. So I think he just gets it. I think that's the one thing I would say about Paul Warren. He just understands what football fans want, what football fans think. But look, he said, I'm sure we'll get onto it at some point, he saw this season as a personal failure, but from considering where the club was, and you spoke about it at the start, the squad that Liam Rossini had was an awfully tough challenge in terms of what you had to put together. You imagine being a manager coming into that completely new set of players that you haven't recruited and then trying to work with it to go, look, 15 games unbeaten in the league was a pretty big achievement, and he slotted straight in. It was just the last few weeks and months that possibly let him down.
And on top of that, you had players that hadn't even gelled together. It's different if the players had been together for a couple of years and knew each other and you're just asking them to play different. They still know their idiosyncrasies and things like that. But these players were still in like the phases of groups. They were still in that like forming, norming phase, trying to figure each other out, how they like the balls received. In addition to new coach comes in addition to players that don't suit my style. So there was a lot of different complicated pieces. And sometimes that those pieces are all overlooked when you look at the grand plan, because like you say, we went on the unbeaten run, which we'll talk about in a minute. And that really glossed over a lot of things. Jason?
We will move on to that in a second. But a point that literally has probably just come to my head in the last 30 seconds as Don was talking about it there. I've been quite refreshed by some of the honesty that Paul Warren's come with as well, just the way that he talked. But in all fairness, I think actually Wayne, in some respects, when he was at the club, gave quite a bit of honesty. And I think Liam Rossini gave quite a bit of honesty as well. I just think that this is probably somebody in a very similar ilk as to what we've had over the last 2 years, but has got a little bit more experience at managerial level and has obviously got a few things under his belt as bargaining chips as well in that sort of thing, whereas he's been there and he's done it. And like you said, Dom, I've heard the interview, obviously, that he's done. He said it. He feels it's a failure. And that's obviously, I think for me personally, obviously as a fan, that's nice to hear. The proof will be in the pudding, obviously throughout the summer, and what he can do and what he brings, and a torturous pre-season for the lads, I'm sure, ready to have another go at the division. But yeah, I'm not so sure that Paul Warren's a million miles away from Rossini, to be honest with you. It's certainly in the way that he talks about the game. They've obviously got, you see these managers that are out there that talk a fantastic game as well, and you know, don't always turn it up and do it on the pitch. So
Like
it
Sam Allardyce the other day, that was psycho.
well, yeah,
That
but he
somebody
does it though.
mentally checking in.
Yeah, well, who knows? If he keeps them up, then fair enough. But yeah, I don't think it is a massive difference in styles of manager, to be honest. But the one thing that I think probably jumps out the most from me, and it's the first time that we've had it in probably 4 years, is a manager has come in with a team that he's worked with for years, a team that he's worked with and has had success. Obviously they've had failures as well, but they've had the success. And you look back over the last few years, I mean, Cocu obviously came in with Twan Sheepers, didn't he? And the other guy whose name's absolutely escapes me at the minute, but they were sort of a team. And then obviously Wayne come in, he didn't really have anybody. Rossini for a short period didn't really have anybody. So it's nice to have a balanced team of assistant manager, coach, goalkeeper. I know there's a lot more staff around a first team environment, but at the end of the day, that is quite a core. They've known each other for years. They've all worked together. They've all individually done their own thing, and you know, assistant manager, some of them. It's not a bad fit, and obviously it obviously clicked at Rotherham, and so it doesn't surprise me that David Clough and whoever else may well have influenced or helped make that decision. It doesn't surprise me that the change came. In some respects, but at the same time, I think the timing of it was obviously a little bit wishy-washy. I mean, I was in the stands after that Wickham game. Derby win 2-1, two goals from Conor Hourihan in a game that was a little bit topsy-turvy. But Derby were what, seventh in the league or something, like sixth or seventh? You think to yourself, you know, not bad. And then straight away, the trigger's pulled in that international break. And obviously, I'm sure there's a lot more thought process gone behind it from obviously from a fan's perspective, that it almost did come as a bit of a gut reaction again. And it's like, oh, here we go. We've had these from Mel. We've had these sort of things before. I remember 2016, where 17, where we sat about third, and a certain manager got sacked. And it's like, yeah, okay. But obviously, because of everything that's gone off, it's almost slate clean with the management and the hierarchy, isn't it? It's like David, Mr. Klaus is allowed to do his things. But it was one of those where they come in, and like you said, Dom, they come in, they've got a whole new bunch of players, even though he has honestly said he tried to sign a few of them. So that's a bonus, because they're obviously, he was the kind of players that he was looking for, but a lot of them weren't, let's be honest. And you could tell that there was a fair few that couldn't cope with the way that he wanted to play this season, in my opinion. He's tried different square pegs in round holes. He's tried all these different things. We had certain players who started off quite well, turn of the year have kind of dropped off a little bit. Fitness is, I mean, the word fitness, how many times the word fitness is going to be used in pre-season? And I think we'll all wear it out to death, I'm sure, on all various media platforms. But that is Paul Warren, isn't it? He is a fitness coach, Dom. That's his background. If one thing out of anything, that he's going to make sure that this team comes back in what, 5 weeks' time or whatever it might be, is they're going to be a lot fitter than they were this season, I would assume. And that's obviously the players that are already here, the players that are going to stay, and potentially the people that are going to come in are going to lean towards, they are fit, agile, get around the pitch. That's his style.
And it's been said around Moor Farm that they're whispering the words pre-season when they talk about Paul Warren's pre-season methods under Richie Barker and Hammy and Andy Warrington as well. And we've actually been invited to watch them at Pride Park when they do a session on there to actually see what they do to them because from what I understand, it's almost like a five-a-side game on an 11-a-side pitch, and you go until Richie Barker tells you to stop. So it's not like you can stop and not give 100%. It sounds relentless. But yeah, look, that's what he's about. He wants athletes. He said it from the second he got in. Remember his first press conference? He said they're not athletes at the moment, but they will be. And I think this summer, you'll start to see that take shape. And the interesting thing for me is going to be who out of the current Derby side really takes in that message, and who kicks on again next season after a pre-season with Paul Warne, because he says the squad needs surgery. But I think it's going to be really interesting, and it always is, over a summer when a new manager can have his say with a squad and give them that fresh look at things.
Yeah, and we'll talk about the end of the season and parts of next season in a few minutes, but I'm really excited about it because essentially what you have is, for instance, Chelsea have just hired Pochettino, essentially, right? And so he knows he's going to get two or three games to look at the players from the stands, sort everything out, be in and around it, and then hit him in preseason. And essentially with Paul Warren, he's had 8 months to kind of work it out, to find everything out about these players, to build relationships with them, understand them, and then he can go into preseason. So for me, I'm very excited about the upcoming season because he knows everything that he's going to know about these players because he essentially had a full year. He's going to have embargoes lifted and things like that to go on. So it's going to be rather exciting next year. And Dom, from you in the commentary and from you as your lineage of being a Derby County supporter your entire life, the expectations for this season, I think going in, I think all four of us who we had sat there and said, hey, Derby, we're going to be challenging for the playoffs. I think we all would have sat here honestly, hand over heart, and gone, you know what? That sounds pretty good. We don't need to get in the playoffs, just challenge for the playoffs, and we'll be content with that because it might take a couple of years to solidify. And then it shows the expectation now that we miss out on the playoffs by, what was it? I think it was it a couple of goals or was it a point, something very, very fine margin. And we're sitting here a bit crestfallen and a bit downbeat. When we hearken back to the late autumn, early winter period, when you said Derby went on that 15, 16, 17 game unbeaten run. For me, Jason and I were talking about it, and Jack as well on the podcast, and it was like, this streak is kind of just snuck up on it. It was a little bit sneaky in a way because it got to like 7 or 8 games before anybody really started to point it out. And then you're like, oh, Christ, you know, we've got a streak going. That streak really raised the bar and the elevation levels, didn't it? Because then we started looking ahead and thought, can we catch Plymouth? Can we catch Wednesday? Can we catch Ipswich in the kind of automatics? And it really changed the focal points of the season, didn't it? From a fan's perspective, and maybe even from a player perspective as well, because you go on that long run and then all of a sudden you're not worried about staying between 4 and 6. You're like, what if we keep going? What if we kick on? And I mean, what an incredible run, and it changed the expectations, didn't it?
I think that's something you see around football nonstop, don't you? Look at what David Moyes did at West Ham last season. Suddenly the expectation gets lifted. Halfway through this season, they're struggling. They want him gone. And look, things just change, don't they, with wins and with unbeaten runs. And I think I often use the phrase victim of their own success, because you look at what Paul Warren did during that unbeaten run with this set of players. It's very limited in terms of numbers. You think of 22 players used in the league this season, two of which are Asula and Liam Thompson, that weren't at the club for the second half as well. You've got to think of the tools he was working with. And I think the momentum they gained during that is what made the difference. Aaron Cashin said it was autopilot at times. They would just turn up, roll through teams and go home. And that was the key to that. And as soon as you get on a run, and Paul Warren actually said when he first arrived, I don't know if you remember, but he said the key to success in getting promotion is to go on a run. And as soon as they did that, and they're in and around the battle for the automatics, got into the playoffs in end of October at MK Dons away, and then didn't drop out until just a few weeks ago. So it's one of them where as soon as you set that bar, of course, if fans are seeing that, and of course, if we in the media are seeing that, that's what you're going to hold the players to. But it just turned out that, unfortunately, by the end, they ran out of steam and the limitations that were on them came into play. And that January recruitment as well, under all the restrictions and all the issues they faced with loan fees and things like that, just came back to hamper them. But luckily, going forward in the future, that's not going to be the case.
Yeah, and that's what I wanted to talk about, Dom, is, you know, I was listening to Derby County's website, and Paul Warren sat down with, you know, Owen Bradley and was talking through the season and things like that. And I think he admitted that the January signings didn't have the impact that they kind of had expected that they had, you know, they would have done. Harvey White, undoubtedly a talented footballer, but sometimes that doesn't translate down in League One when you are, you know, at such a different level with physicality and things like that. He was kind of thrust into it, not immediately because they played Corey Smith in midfield after Max Bird's injury, but he was kind of thrust in to get more minutes than probably should have early on. Tony Springett, the highlight for him was to keep that ball in play against Port Vale to get that winner, which ultimately propelled, you know, continued to keep the streak, and Derby would have been a lot further away without that. So, you know, you bring in Luke McGee from Forest Green Rovers to replace Joseph Anang. And for me, I was like, why are we taking up another loan slot with a goalkeeper who's more than likely never going to play? I understand they need three goalkeepers and things like that. And hindsight's a wonderful thing, but ultimately the impact of the January signings, I think, had a massive impact. And Jack, this is where I want to bring you in on this. I mean, the January signings, they looked good on paper. They were kind of in areas of need. He wanted depth out wide. He wanted a different kind of creative midfielder. We knew the kind of the quality Harvey White had at Tottenham, but they ultimately didn't have the desired effect, did they?
No, they're flat to deceive in the end, really. When, you know, as you say, Tony Springett's highlight, arguably keeping the ball in at Port Vale, that sums up his spell, really, is just ultimately very disappointing for a player who, we talked about a couple of exciting young players there who should have come in and helped the team just keep going. And, I mean, we're talking about momentum and the unbeaten streak. It did seem that once that ended, you see, there was then a 5-0 against Morecambe. And then from there, we went into this really kind of inconsistent run, didn't we? Which actually isn't too dissimilar to how Paul Warren's tenure started. We talked about the unbeaten run, but it wasn't the easiest of starts. And I don't mean the coffee machine being broken on day one. But in fact, you know, those first games, there was the away win at Cambridge, and then they lost to Mansfield on penalties, and they lost to Port Vale with James Collins getting sent off. So, you know, but then they seemed to find something that worked. They built that positive momentum, and these new players seemingly didn't slot into it in the right way. I think Harvey White, as you say, said earlier, Max Bird's injury probably hampered him, put more pressure on him. But yeah, that's going to be something that's key this summer, I think. Loans are going to have to be used effectively. But the other thing with those two outfield players is they're both very young players. Dom's talking about 22 players used throughout the season. I mentioned this a few weeks ago. I went and crunched the numbers on these players, and there isn't an outfield player in the Derby squad, or there wasn't this season, aged between 23 and 28. And I think that'll be something else that is key this summer, getting players in their prime, including some loans. Obviously, you know, take some young players, give some youngsters some opportunities if they look good, but we need experienced players. But you need, if you look at Sheffield Wednesday, I know they're looking like they, you know, fell short of automatic promotion, but the comparison was them. The majority of their squad is kind of 28 to 31. So that stood them in much better stead.
Yeah, that kind of prime age is something that was definitely a gap that Derby didn't have. And Jason, before I bring you in, I just want to ask Dom about one more thing that was a real highlight for me in kind of that winter period, and then I'll turn it over to you, Jay, was the trip to Anfield. My mom obviously watches Derby, but she does have an affinity for Liverpool, so it was a bit unbearable to watch it with her from time to time. But, you know, when the game happened and you're at Anfield under the lights in the cup, that's kind of the reason that we say that the football club was saved for moments like that. And that was kind of the first seminal moment that we went to a big ground under the lights in a big game against the Premier League team, against a world-class team. And it was a really proud moment for me as a Derby fan, because I was like, this is what the football club was saved for. And to see the lads go out at Anfield, granted it was more of a Liverpool 11, but for Liverpool to struggle enough where they have to bring on players like Nunez and Salah, and they're really, really up against it. And we took them all the way to penalties, and we had that game where we could have potentially done it. We ultimately didn't. That's okay, because we were never going to win the competition. That's okay. But it was such a proud moment when you agree, Dom, for the lads to perform like that under everything that had gone on. When you look at everything in the context of the previous kind of 6 months, to go there to Anfield at one of the teams that was what? They were in the Champions League final at the same time Derby were being relegated. And to put on a performance like that, I just felt incredibly proud of the club and the players and the management and everything at the time. It just really felt like a seminal moment because that was the first big moment, the first big game that we had since the football club was sold.
Yeah, and it was the club that never walk alone against the club that march for their future. So it was quite poetic. And I think that night, people forget about how many of the experiments that worked in that unbeaten run almost began in that Liverpool game. You think of Louis Sibley playing at wing-back. You think of Craig Forsyth playing at centre-back. That team that went to Liverpool and went to Anfield wasn't a fully fit Derby County side. There were players all over the place. You had Willa Sula playing on the left-hand side. It wasn't Derby at their strongest, but what it did, it showed a resilience that Paul Warne eventually was able to build on, seeing Craig Forsyth in that position against some of the world's elite players when Bobby Firmino comes on in the second half as well. He's putting himself up against players like that. And I think at full time, I remember we had Jamie Ward with us on Radio Derby, and he said that will start something. That will pick them all up in that dressing room. They may have lost on penalties, but that wasn't the point. That wasn't the story. It was a club that had 5 contracted players, nearly went out of business, going to one of the most decorated clubs in English football, Champions League winners, Premier League winners, and putting up a fight. And they did. And I think that was the first time under Paul Warne, and I don't speak for everyone here, but I think that was the first time personally I had seen them really put in that fight and graft as if they were playing for him, playing for the badge. And I think it brought a lot of togetherness.
Yeah, no, I would agree with that. It was a special night. It was. I mean, we've had them over the years at Old Trafford mainly. That just seems to have it's been over the last few years. But yeah, no, it was nice. It was a marker, wasn't it? And it was good to see. I'm gonna throw a little bit of a spanner in the works as we start kind of moving on towards the back end of the season, and I'm gonna put something out there that I know, Dom, that you mentioned on your on the Radio Derby podcast on the talking, because I listened to it this morning on my way to work. I'm going to put something in there that I know you touched on. For everything that was good about that unbeaten run, which of course that it was, the facts are that Derby didn't beat a team away from home above 14th in the league, I think it is. I don't think we beat a team out of the top 6 at home other than Barnsley and Bolt. Okay, Barnsley and Bolt. That's out. I can't say only, but then reel off 3, can I? But Barnsley, Bolton, we beat them out. But there's other teams up there. I mean, we've lost both games to Plymouth. Okay, they go up. Ipswich have gone up. We only picked up 1 point against them. There is, if you're going to do it from a stat point of view, and I imagine Paul Warne is that kind of a person that will do that. And I don't think this is necessarily a bad thing when you're trying to build and move on. There are obvious gaps in this Derby side. There are obviously gaps in the season that has just gone. There are reasons why, ultimately, Derby didn't get over the line. Don't get me wrong. I know if we had got over the line, it's a 3-game shootout. Anything can happen. Look what happened Friday night. Who would have thought that Peterborough would have won that game 4-0 against Sheffield Wednesday after we just played them on the Sunday? I don't think anybody would have probably have predicted that. So we look at it from on a stats-based thing. There are stats out there that pretty much sum up why Derby missed out, aren't they?
Yeah, absolutely. I don't think Paul Warne would hide from that at all either. I will say that they beat Peterborough at home as well. So Peterborough, Barnsley and Bolton at home, but away from home, that was the big concern. And that was something for Paul Warne and his side that they just couldn't ever quite get to grips with. They could never get those results over the line. And you wonder why sometimes, and people have spoken about the game management perhaps from Paul Warne and substitutions at a time. But as we've already spoken about in this chat already, you look at the teams they're up against, and the Ipswiches, the Plymouths of the world, the Sheffield Wednesdays, when you go and play a team like that, it's the margins that count, and it's bringing people off the bench that can come in and change a game. And unfortunately, you look at Derby County, they didn't quite have that. Unless they hit the ground running in games, it was sometimes a struggle. So whilst I'm not making excuses for Paul Warne, I'm just trying to provide the context. They did struggle. They didn't impart themselves on games. And whilst Paul Warne would often say that they're going for the win, sometimes it didn't look like that. But then you look at the game away at Ipswich, it was just a Curtis Davis mistake that led to their goal. Otherwise, Derby were very much in that game at 0-0. Sheffield Wednesday away, I'd hate to go on about it, but it was Curtis Davis again, unfortunately for him, as his last act in a Derby shirt that gave it away and gave away the penalty. So look, there's loads of things you can look at, and there's loads of stats you can look at, but at the end of the day, they didn't take their chances. And I think there's a stat that's come out today that they missed the most clear-cut chances in the Football League out of any side, and I think that eventually cost them. I'll try and find the number.
Someone's been reading our Twitter account.
What a surprise. What a surprise. But no, I would agree. I think you look, and everybody will harp back, and this is probably why some fans don't like, well, not like, that's probably the wrong word. Look at the time that Rossini had at the beginning of the season. Those draws that we picked up away from home against the likes of Shrewsbury, Morecambe, they've cost us. And obviously, Paul Warner said exactly the same recently. It's not the game against Sheffield Wednesday last Sunday that cost us. It was the draw against Portsmouth. It was the draw against MK Dons. It was the draw against Bristol Rovers, although, in all fairness, they fully deserved something out of that game. I want to wrap up the season as a whole, because we've got other things to move on to, and I'm conscious of your time. I think as a whole, you know, you hear the words Paul Warne's come into Derby County with his management team, and a lot of fans will have done exactly the same. Oh, well, he's done this. And the facts and the stats start popping out again, don't they? Well, he's done this with Rotherham. He's very good at getting teams up, not great at keeping teams in the Championship, probably different budgets and all that kind of thing. And hopefully in the future that it works with Derby County. But and the song that the fans sing is the League One Guardiola. It's, I know that's a tongue in cheek kind of thing, but, and then that ops into what he said in his interview with Rams TV. And I know he's had other interviews that he feels that this is a failure this season. I mean, that's pretty critical on himself, especially when if he'd got everything that he wanted in a row and he ultimately failed, I could sort of accept where he's coming from. But the fact that he said that without a lot of things, I would say, a lot of things that us fans don't realise as well, a lot of things that he's not got, which he would probably want as a steady football club, if you want to put that in inverted commas. I like that from him. I like the fact that he's that passionate. We're not going to brush over it too much, but I know it's there that we've got, obviously, some of the restrictions, if not all of the restrictions, are kind of lifted in the summer. I know this is the key to the treasure chest of David Clowes, but I'm very interested now in seeing what Paul Warne can do without all the restrictions and what he can bring in. I think we all can see, as fans, you watch them week in, week out, you'll have your own opinions, but I'm sure we're all kind of the same. We know where Derby needs strengthening. Paul Warne knows where Derby needs strengthening in the way that he wants to play. It's one of those things where, as I say, he feels disappointed, which, not even disappointed. The word is failure. I think he's being harsh on himself. And I suppose some of the best people in the world are self-critical to that extreme. But I like, from me personally, I like that. And I'm looking forward to seeing what he can do. And the lifting of everything, Dom, in summer, well, not everything, but as far as we know, the lifting of a fair few bits and pieces. How much harder would it have been for Paul under, if those restrictions had stayed? I mean, we always kind of thought they probably were going to get lifted, because we know David's running a pretty solid ship at the moment. But if he'd have gone, whatever division we'd have been in, if he'd have gone in, he knew that there was going to be a few players Curtis Davis, Richard Stearman, James Chester, these players were going to leave. I don't think that's any real surprise to a lot of people that certain individuals were going to move on. And it was going to be another year of a massive rebuild under a new manager, under a new philosophy, under new this, that, and the other. How much easier do you think this is going to be now for him? Because I must admit, I've got a feeling that this could be, and I'm not just ringing this as a derby. I've not. This is heart and head at the same time. This could be the key between Derby being competitive again next season, but actually really having a go for it next season, that the shackles are off a little bit.
Well, yeah, the shackles are off and the restrictions are no longer there, but they're not going to throw money at it. This is the reality I think Derby fans will probably need to get used to, is the fact that gone are the days of big seven-figure fees and so on, and big signings and marquee ones. This is a modest budget going into the season that is competitive in League One. As you'd expect with Derby County, there'll still be a strong attraction, there'll still be a strong powerhouse, but the restrictions are gone. If the restrictions had stayed, wow, it would have been an even more difficult summer. I mean, I wouldn't even care to imagine how hard it would have been for them, because having spoken to Paul Warne through that January period, just trying to get players in to try and help, and hearing some of the stories off the record, it was very, very tough. And every negotiation they go into is Derby County, and clubs say, look, oh, right, okay, you know what? You really want that player on loan? We'll have a fee for him. That's no longer an issue. So going into this summer, I think it's going to be one of the biggest summers of Derby County's recent history in terms of rebuilding the right way under a manager that they've invested in. And they're asking for patience in his methods as well. But he's spoken about it a lot. And I think he said it needs surgery. And that's a big line to say from a head coach going into a summer. Those players are well aware of his feelings towards the squad. So he's going to make plenty of additions. But I think it may also be quite interesting who goes out the doors, because there are players there that are under contract that maybe aren't part of his plan. So that could be quite an interesting turn of events. But look, he knows he needs to get a striker. He knows he wants to get some big, ugly centre-halves, as Derby County fans keep telling me on the talking. And look, there's plenty of bodies that need to come in. But you look at the wing-back situation. He wants players that could run 11, 12K a game. And he hasn't had that this season. So this is going to be, yeah, very interesting, very entertaining. I don't think you'll be short of content, lads.
So, Dom, I don't think we will either. I think it is a massive summer. And I want to talk about a few individual players before we move on to who might be departing and have a little quick discussion. So first name that kind of comes to mind is the top scorer, the player of the year, the talismanic player, probably the one that single-handedly, I think, Jack did this, actually. I'm going to give Jack a shout-out to him. He crunched the numbers for me a couple weeks ago, and it was what, Jack? David McGoldrick was worth 13 points to Derby at the time when you texted me, and that was 3 or 4 weeks ago. He was single-handedly worth 13 points to Derby this season?
Yeah, so what you asked me to do was to look through all the results and simply remove McGoldrick's goals and see how the results would have differed and how the table would have differed for Derby. And Derby would have had, 13 points less. Obviously, that's not accounting for the fact that if we hadn't signed McGoldrick, or McGoldrick wasn't playing, somebody else played and all of that. But,
yeah.
But, so it's an imperfect metric, but it's a metric nonetheless. It's, 13 points less. So that shows how
pretty significant
many points he won for us.
So, Dom, David McGoldrick, I think it's a consensus between Jack, Jason, and myself, and I'm not going to speak for you. David McGoldrick, he has to be re-signed, right? We know the club's going to enter negotiations with him. We also know that he was at the playoff final for Notts County in Chesterfield, and he does have an affinity for Notts County as well. David McGoldrick, first of all, could you report on any progress for us? We'd love to break an exclusive. That's not going to happen. But David McGoldrick, he has to be re-signed, right?
Yeah, I think if I had... Oh, am I stuck? No, I'm off mute. Still not used to this after about 3 years. If I had an exclusive and I put it on here, I think work would be pretty annoyed. But no, look, they're in negotiations, and that's all I can say, really. I think he's high on the priority list. I spoke to Paul Warne about him at the end of the season. They'd already started having conversations. So it's one of those things, the longer it goes on, I know the mood around that the fan base might start to get a little twitchy, but he doesn't have an agent. He's assessing his options and he's quite content with life at the minute because he knows he's in demand. He was waiting for a phone call last summer. It came from Derby County eventually. When you think of how well he's done for the club this season, it's baffling to think that. But he knows the phone's going to ring this season. So I think he can afford himself some time to maybe go on holiday, go to a playoff final here and there. And just take his time with it. I think that is the sole focus of David McGoldrick. He's his own man. He's been here, done that. So I wouldn't get too concerned. All the signs I had from the club were positive. So that's all I can say, really.
And Dom, another player that we saw has penned his love letter to the Birmingham City fans, but he was shown working out in Derby County shorts, oddly enough, with the number 51, which doesn't really make any sense. Christian Bielik, he'll return to the Rams. I know he's got, does he have 1 or 2 years left on his contract? I think it's 1 year left on his deal. His value will probably never be higher than what it is this summer for Derby. We know that they may or may not still owe Arsenal money. Not sure how the administration money worked out with the footballing debts. Do you expect him to stick around for Derby, or do Derby sit there and go, we've got enough in midfield. It's about the only position on the field that we're relatively deep in. We can afford to fund a little bit of the rebuild with some Christian Bielik money, because let's be honest, he talked about when he signed, he wanted to be in the Premier League round about the end of his contract. Even if Derby get double promotions, that probably won't happen. Just trying to do my maths in my head. And then, you know, he's going to leave as a free agent. So, is Christian Bielik, do you expect Derby to stick or twist with Christian Bielik?
Put it this way, I think I'd be surprised if Christian Bielik played next season for Derby County, because I think you hit the nail on the head, Corey, where you said getting money for the rebuild. And if they can, they will. And you've got to think about the wages that he's on as well. They're huge in comparison to some of the other players at the football club. And look, if his heart's not in it at Derby County, Paul Warren always said he won't hold people hostage at the football club. So whilst he's a very talented player, his injury record isn't great. Whether you can rely on him for a season that's demanding, as we've just seen in League One under Paul Warren, and what he expects from players, that's the question, isn't it? And I know people think back to some of his performances in Derby, in a Derby shirt, when he was fully fit and he was a fantastic player. But look, I'm not sure he's part of the future plans. I'm not sure.
And Dom, listening to the BBC Radio Derby talking the other night, you were at Darren Robinson on, and he was discussing Jason Knight, Max Byrne, and Louis Sibley to a degree. He mentioned two of them, but I'm going to group all three of them together here. I was talking with Jason about this the other day. Louis Sibley's played under, what, 4 different Derby County managers now and kind of failed to establish himself as a first-team regular. You've got Max Byrne, who's a key cog. I would expect him to probably be named captain if he's still around in the summer, because he was the vice captain. And Jason Knight's had his 1-year deal extended, which says to me, we don't want you to leave on a free. We're willing to get some money for you because there's no talks of an ongoing contract thing. Do you expect all of them to be here next year? Two of them, and whatever. And this is not you as BBC Radio Derby presenter. This is you just as Dom the fan here. Because I can see where Jason Knight wants to play for Ireland. He wants to be playing at a higher level. He's used to playing at Championship. And like Darren made the good point, they are Championship standard players. You can make the case, especially for Max Byrne and Jason Knight, that they are Championship quality players in a League One team. How much longer are they going to want to stick at this level? Because they're starting to get and reach their prime years. And like you said, again, when you stay in League One for so long, you become a League One player. You don't become a Championship player that's been knocked down to relegation. You become a League One player. So do you expect one of them, two of them, all three of them to stick around, to go, and some of the money to fund the rebuild?
Look, I really don't like to give my opinion because I don't want to come across as a fan, and I do understand that I am in some regard. But look, they're players that have been part of Derby County for years. They've come through the academy. You look at Louis Sibley, and we've had the conversation this season. I know the guys have had it in past seasons. Every other month, he's saying, "Oh, is this the moment he's going to hit some momentum? He's going to hit some form now and really hold down his position." And unfortunately, he hasn't been able to do that. And I just think for Louis Sibley, maybe a fresh start could be something he desires, and maybe it's something that could benefit his career. But he's got that talent, and that's the little that little bit that you look at, and he shows it, flashes of it, whether a manager can get it out of him. And you'd have to say, with the managers you rattled off there and how many he's played under, that you do start to doubt it the older he gets. Jason Knight is a player that has obviously had his contract option extended over the summer, as Paul Warne said back in February. He's clearly a talented player, and Paul Warne has said if he could come back as a player, it would be Jason Knight. So I think it's clear that he likes Jason Knight. But I think Jason Knight will admit to you, if he spoke to you, he admitted it to me in an interview this season, that he needs to add more goals to his game. He needs to add end product, because whilst he's a great runner, his impact on games, when you look at it in the defining moments, you spoke about David McGoldrick's immediate impact on the points tally of Derby County. He doesn't particularly do that at the moment. So it's interesting, isn't it? He's ended up the season at right back as well, which is, look, I think it's quite telling to some respect, but there's no doubt in a Paul Warne team he'll go back into that almost centre midfield role, I'm sure, because Warne will want his legs there. So look, he's an asset, he's a Republic of Ireland international, good player, but he's only got a year left and he'll have a big decision to make. Max Bird is someone I'm fascinated to see next season. I spoke about players taking on the Paul Warne message over pre-season, how it could benefit a few. I think he could really benefit from it. For years he's come through the academy system and has been told to play a certain way, and he's incredibly talented. There's a great head on his shoulders. I love talking to him because he is such a geek about football, and he will talk to you so intrinsically into every aspect of the game, and he watches and takes in so much, almost to the point where Dave McGoldrick said he needs to go and have a beer sometime because he's obsessed. His work ethic is incredible, and I think Derby County, with the character that he has, should keep hold of him. But as Darren mentioned on the talk-in, and he knows far more than I do, players have their own aspirations. But I know for him, if he were to leave, which I'm not sure is in the offing at all, he would be disappointed to end on that Sheffield Wednesday game.
Jason, I want to come to you and Jack as well for the same question I just asked Dom. The trio that we just discussed, do you expect him to be here next season? Because for me personally, I could see at least two of them going. I think Max Bird will probably stay because we'll give him the captaincy, but I could see Knighty going, and I could see Sibbs going as well. Jason, what are your thoughts on the midfield triumvirate?
Well, this is where, as a fan podcast, I'm allowed to say what I feel, unlike Dom, bless him. Louis Sibley, I don't see him being at Derby. I really don't. Undoubtedly has got something about him.
I just don't see him as a Paul Warne type player. Do you? I mean, he's like a...
It's not, like I don't think... There, it, I don't.
Flashes and you're like, oh, he can do it. And then he disappears for 4 weeks. And you're like, where is this Louis Sibley?
Yeah, I just think... Now, I know there's been reasons behind this. And this, Louis and Jason Knight come into the same kind of idea for me here. And I've heard him accolade Jason Knight on various interviews that everybody's done, but I'm going to still pair them in the same thing. If Paul Warne wanted both of them moving forward, they would have played in their natural position a hell of a lot more than they have done. And I know there has been squad, for me personally, I know there's been issues with around the squad, but we have left backs, we have right backs probably a little bit less indulgent than we are on left back, but we have had players that could have played there. Jason Knight and Louis Sibley could have played further forward in their natural positions a lot more this season than they have done, and that what slightly makes me wonder. Louis Sibley more on the side of, is he up to the task? Jason Knight on the opposite side of, if I play him in this position, he does really well, somebody's going to come in and buy him. Well, no, sorry, no. He's living. He knew his contract was coming out. Now, let's face it. I think everybody knows he's renewing his contract.
It felt like he was shoehorned into right back because we said, we want to get you minutes and game time and showcase you as a good player. And then it was kind of like, you kind of struggled. Let's put Corey Smith there and let's put you into midfield. But you're right there, Jason. I did get the sense that I felt like he was a little shoehorned into right back, even by Liam Rossignol, who knew what Jason Knight could do because Liam Rossignol had been there for a while. We knew, obviously, Darby didn't get a right back. That was one of the problem positions all season. Corey Smith performed admirably, but is not a right back. But it kind of felt like Jason Knight was given promises of you are going to play. And then when they rolled the midfield out, they were like, well, doing the numbers here, you're not, there's only so many positions. There's only three and you're like the fourth guy. So maths wise, you're either going to play right back and you get us on the bench. And he's like, well, I'll do a job at right back, but you're right. It did kind of feel like he was a little shoehorned, into that role. I've kind of felt that. And then when he was unleashed and put into midfield, we're like, wow, Christ, Jason Knight's back. This is exactly what we wanted. And the team felt a little bit more balanced, but he did feel like, especially in the early part of the season, he was shoehorned into that right back role to get minutes.
A little bit, and I think Jason Knight is the interesting one. I think Lewis Sibley, he's had the opportunity, he just doesn't seem to have grasped it, and he's what, 22, 23 now. He should, in my opinion, be making
Lewis
an impression
Sibley's still
at this
21
level.
Years old, but he's
fine. But still, 21 though.
He probably
should be making an impression, and he's not. But I'll take that on the side. Max Bird, I'm gonna cushion him a little minute, and we'll come to Jason Knight. We spoke on the podcast, Corey. You weren't here the other week when me and Chris was talking about it. Jason Knight's got 160 odd appearances for Derby. He's scored less than 15 goals and he's made less than 10 assists.
You want
in 161 appearances?
Yeah.
And I appreciate his age. I appreciate he has moved around a little bit over the last 18 months. But the predominant amount of those 160 odd appearances, I would imagine, were in the top end of the field. And that just goes to show you. And I think the bigger stat is, I think out of the goals that he has scored, at least three of them came in his first five games. And then it's what comes. So I'm not saying that Jason Knight's not a bloody good footballer, because he is. I'm not saying that he's not championship level, because he is. I'm not saying that he couldn't aspire to be at the Premier League level, because he probably could, possibly. I think he's got a lot about him.
Is he as good as Jeff Hendrick was at the same age?
No.
No, I agree.
And Max Bird isn't as good as Will Hughes was at his age. And Lewis Sibley's not as good. And this is the thing. So I know it's the next crop along, and we're kind of clinging on to those because they're the players that are here.
Yeah, because they come to the academy, you feel an affinity.
Honestly, right, Corey, if all three of those were missing next season, do Derby miss all three of them that much? And I'm sorry, my answer is I don't think so.
Now with no embargo, probably not, because we find players who can release them.
I don't think so.
Jack, similar sentiments. How do you see that midfield trio?
Right. So there's a couple of things to add here, which I think are important context, which I learned a couple of weeks ago. But before that, I'm going to say, Dom, well done. Brilliant BBC impartiality there. You know, you've got to...
I do apologize.
No, it's good because
you don't need to apologize, Dom. We don't want to catch anybody out. We're just trying to have a good chat. So
I mean that seriously, because from my perspective, putting me kind of doing some of the journalism stuff, brilliant, expert, and it's trying to balance that. But yeah, with the fan perspective, and that can be difficult in some circumstances.
Thank you.
I'm saying that on a much smaller scale. But same with Max Bird, I think he'll stay because one, captaincy. But the other thing, you know, we're talking there about his character and the, you know, what he adds in that sense. And that is such a big thing for managers in general. But I was at an event the other week and I was hearing Paul Warren talk about all of this. And that having the right characters, as well as their fitness and then being able to run, having the right characters is such a big thing for him in players he signs, in staff appointments. So I think someone like Max Bird and the leadership qualities that he has at, what, 23? I think he is, or is he still 22? I think he'll stay. I think the other two, Sibley and Knight, the jury's kind of out. I think it'll depend on offers that come in for them, frankly. I think if there's a decent offer that comes in, now Derby can spend to an extent, and they have. That's not going to be big fees, as we've said in the summer, but it's that added bit of flexibility, isn't it? That's the key thing. So if there's free agent looking for a bit, you know, a bit more money than someone you can buy who's then asking for a lot less money, you've now got the opportunity to weigh up both deals and look at which deal's better rather than just, well, this is the only one we're allowed. It's things like that where, again, so maybe they'll want a bit of money to have further flexibility. So I think it'll depend on that. But yeah, Max Bird, I think I'm pretty confident will stay because, you know, especially with losing Curtis Davis and his leadership. And I think the other thing that reflects, actually, and I saw, I think it was Ryan Conway was talking about this the other day on Twitter. He was saying about how confident Darley must be in Erin Cashin's leadership qualities to be able to lose three vastly experienced centre-backs. So I think, you know, I think Max Bird is another one in that camp where he's got, and probably more so than Cashin, he's got the experience beyond his years because he's, you know, he's captained Derby so many times this season. And yeah, as Don was saying, it seems a good character. And I know, you know, that's huge for Paul Warren and his management style.
Yeah, it is, Jack. And I think, you know, Dom, what you were saying there with Max Bird benefiting from potentially a Paul Warren preseason, because I Jason will attest to this. I'm sometimes sit there with Max Bird and I'm just like, what kind of midfielder is he? He doesn't score goals. He doesn't break up play like a destroyer. He doesn't necessarily, sometimes he's just there and he like sometimes plays crab football where he just plays it side to side sometimes and whatever. So I think Paul Warren can take his game to the next level. And Jack, like you said, you know, if Jason Knight goes for £1 million and you're in League One, you can do a lot with £1 million in League One in terms of rebuilding players. You can get four or five different players. And same with Louis Sibley. I think if you can get some fees, flip them, I can see Max Bird being the next captain of Derby County, to be honest with you, because he's been in that vice-captain role. Give the vice-captaincy then to Erin Cashin. Dom, before we talk about the future, just very quickly, two bits of news on veteran players, kind of in opposite directions. Craig Forsyth has been renewed for another year, taking his tenure with the Rams for 11 years. And then Curtis Davis, after 6 years, is departing the Rams to move on. And he will not be remembered for whatever happened this year is not what he's going to be remembered for. When they write his epitaph at Derby, it is going to be, you know, him in that purple shirt, pulling it down, him signing the waiver to play with his Achilles tendon. So just real quick, Dom, Craig Forsyth, Curtis Davis, sum it up in a couple of sentences.
Well, I think Craig Forsyth, look, has completely earned that extra year on his deal for the work he's done this season for Derby County. But I also think if you get rid of Craig Forsyth, you have to then bring in three players because he can play fullback, he can play centre half and various positions as well. So I think that comes into it, especially with Craig Forsyth's contract. And look, he's been a great servant to the club, and they're invaluable at football clubs. Whilst he may not be the key cog he was this season, next season, just having him in the building, I think, helps, especially when you see the likes of Curtis Davis leaving, someone that has held the standards of Derby County throughout the roughest times in recent history. Curtis Davis, look, you can't run out of enough words to say about him because he's an absolute leader. He's the model professional. Every time you speak to him, you get humility, you get honesty, you get a thought process, and he's someone that has played with his heart on his sleeve. And you think of all the trials and tribulations he's had at this football club when you look at Philip Cocu favouring a different centre-half over him and then suddenly having to turn to him after the incident that saw Richard Keogh out, suddenly having to turn to Curtis Davis and say, look, actually, you know, I know I said you weren't part of my plans, but can you do his favour? Took that in his stride, complete professional, went on and did his job. And you mentioned there having to sign a waiver and coming in and playing with that injury. That speaks volume of the man. And I think he'll be forever known at Derby County for being a top professional and a top captain. But unfortunately, I think the writing was just on the wall. It was inevitable in the end. He's just not been the same player. And I think if Derby County want to go forward, Paul Warren has to put his own stamp on it. And unfortunately, I think everyone would have guessed that Curtis Davis wasn't part of that.
And Dom, let's just talk very briefly for the next 5 or 6 minutes before we don't suck up your whole evening talking about Derby County and ruin it completely. Looking ahead to the future, I think we obviously had heard from Paul Warren. He was showing players around Moore Farm, trying to get them interested. He's already kind of working the phones to find people. We know that the playoffs are still taking place. We've still got the playoff finals to take place. Premier League still finishing, so the season isn't quite over just yet. When would you start expecting new signings to start rolling through the door? Because for me, I'm looking at it from the outside looking in, and I want to see the dust settle on the FA Cup final, the playoffs, find out teams want to figure out what kind of divisions they are, players want to figure out. We know a lot of retain lists have come out and things like that. When would you start expecting, not asking for specific dates or in the know knowledge or anything like that, but I think people are anticipating signing soon because you're showing people around. Do you expect that to come now, or should we be patient for the next 2 or 3 weeks as players go on holiday, kind of figure things out, figure out offers, and then we're kind of expecting things to really start hitting the ground rolling here June 1st?
Well, no, look, they're going away on a holiday. Paul Warne said he wants to go get some sun. He's getting a break at the moment. But as you say, he's been showing players around. And you go back to when Mark Thomas arrived in February and March. They've been planning for this eventuality without restrictions since then. So they're ready. They're ahead of the curve. They know who is out there because a lot of the retained lists and some good players have come out of them as well from other teams in the Football League. I wouldn't want to put a timestamp on it just because Twitter will come for me. But I just think they're ready, and I wouldn't expect it to be too long before you start to see arrivals, because I know Paul Warne wants and likes to have his squad set by the time pre-season rolls around, because that's a big deal for him to get everybody on the same level. So I don't think it'll be too long.
Jason, before I turn it over to you, Dom, you just said something there, and just very briefly. So Mark Thomas and Paul Warne knew that the embargo was going to be lifted weeks ago?
Did it break and they
were kind of planning differently?
No, so they've been working on a list without restrictions and a list with restrictions.
Okay, two different lists. Like, what if you were, we have a championship quality list if we go up, and we have a League One list if we stay there. Okay, fair enough. Thank you for clearing that up. I was just like, whoa, they've known for that makes sense. Yeah, yeah. Planning for both eventualities. Sorry. Thank you, Dom. Forgive my ignorance. Jason.
Yeah. Hey, let's face it. They probably did know. Who knows? But that kind of thing doesn't come out into the media. But I think the key point from that in what is, and we've said it over the years at Derby, that you get into the playoffs, you make it all the way to the playoff final. You go up, you go down, don't go up. Sorry, go down. Go up, don't go up. It probably hinders you quite a bit in both scenarios in terms of transfer business. And Dom, like you've just said there, and obviously it's been, he actively said it in an interview, he's showing people around. Now, I know that doesn't mean that we're bringing in 50 people in the first week. That doesn't mean that. But how much of a benefit do you think it might be that he almost has first dibs on certain individuals that obviously him and Mark Thomas have been looking at since the summer? And like Corey pointed out, there are still pictures to be painted in terms of promotion, relegation. And we always look at, obviously, Premier League squads, 25, the registering of the 25-man squad, and then eventually the domino effect starts working down. But this year's a bit of a different one for Derby, where they're almost first at the table, and surely that's got to be a bit of a good thing that they've got the feet under their first.
I was actually speaking to someone about this the other day who messaged me, and a friend of mine, Rob, and he said that he was almost happy that they didn't get playoffs in the end just to go on and lose, because it gives them a head start. And Darren spoke about it on The Talking, Darren Robinson, and said, you look at Derby last season, obviously under the circumstances with the last club to release their retain list, this season they're one of the first, and it just kind of sets the standard of maybe the new structure and the organisation going into the summer for the club. And you can bet that those players that he's showing around are players that don't have a contract in the summer yet. So he wouldn't be showing other teams players around at this point of the season. There will be players that know their future, know they're not under contract going into the summer. So he's got his opportunity. And look, his phone is like a hotline. We saw it in January. It is players calling him calling players. It's such a busy time. I think the fact that they haven't got to think about games does give them that extra jump, and just maybe gives them that extra week of, you know, saying, look, pick Derby County over Sheffield Wednesday, although I'm pretty sure Wednesday might be recruiting for League One now.
Yeah, and I think the thing we look back to last summer, and Derby's rebuild job was massive, but we mentioned it on the pod a lot. There was a lot of players out of contract. I think it was something like 1,000 players or whatever it may well have been in sort of like the EFL were out of contract. And we saw in what Derby did in the summer, they were only signed, a lot of them was only on, well, a few of them, sorry, were on 1 year deals, 2 year deals. There's still going to be a fair amount, you would think, of players that are available to Derby. And like we've said, Derby are a catch. They are still a catch, in my opinion. If Derby had come into League One this season and finished 18th, would we be as much of a catch? Maybe not. But we are missed out on the playoffs on one goal, let's face it, on a draw. We missed out on that. And I want to end the podcast on a positive note. The future is a lot brighter for Derby County than it has been over the last 18 months, 2 years. Whilst we were signing players 12 months ago to survive, this year, hopefully, we're signing players for the future, and we're signing players to build something. And come what, first week in August? I know the sort of the dates have been announced. I can't remember what it is now. Is it the first week in August? Whatever it is, that first week in August this year is going to feel a million miles away from, and I think it was what, the 30th of July, was it, this season? Dom, it's going to feel a million miles away, isn't it? And this Derby side is going to look massively different. And I think that's a positive thing.
Yeah, just think of all the things you don't have to talk about this summer in terms of restrictions, in terms of trying to be an accountant, talking about the books, talking about potential owners, everyone trying to pretend they know what they're talking about when talking about potential ownership coming into the building, buying stakes, all that sort of stuff. Don't have to talk about that. So that is all gone. That's all in the past. This is the new Derby County now. This is where the slate is wiped clean, and it's a chance for David Clowes to really set his message across. He's had a year. Look how far it's come in the year off the pitch. You think of the infrastructure with the head of recruitment. You look at what's happened with the women's team as well, and that integration as well. So much has gone on behind the scenes that isn't noticed week in, week out at Pride Park on a match day to set them up for this summer. Whilst it might not, you can't guarantee success. They're working hard, and look, everything is in place, but there's still a long way to go, and there's still a lot of players that need to be signed. So I just think for Derby fans, I think get excited. Why not?
Yeah, and I mean, Jack, do you have anything else for Dom before we finish?
No, I was just going to add, actually, that the other thing, if we're talking about pre-season, the amount of time we've got, it's also really the first kind of normal pre-season for Derby in what, 5 years? You had Lampard leaving, days, his pre-season was kind of kicking off after the playoff final, and Coughley were arriving. You had COVID impacted, project restart, F&D in late and starting up again, which obviously impacted everyone, but again, wasn't normal. And then you had professional standing and all of those restrictions that Wayne Rooney was under trying to recruit in the championship before administration hit. And then obviously last summer and the mammoth job that Liam Rossini had. So it's a normal, it's a standard pre-season with time to implement, hopefully now, as we're seeing, a long-term strategy. And
And
that's
Jack,
exciting.
and that's a good point, and it is exciting because with what you and Dom have just said, it's just dawned on me for the first time in a very long time, we are actually going to have and be able to podcast on a normal closed season. That is remarkable. We won't have to have podcasts where we cry because we think the club's going to go out of business or because the manager's walked out. I mean, they could still very well do that. I don't know. But it's going to be a normal preseason, so it's very exciting, and I think it's. Like Jason said there, to sum it up, last year we were fighting to survive, and this summer we're going to start building to thrive. So we're going from surviving to thriving, and I think that's a super exciting aspect to do. And this is a massive offseason for the football club. It's a massive offseason for Paul Warren because, as I've said before, and not to make it dire, but if he gets it wrong, it could go spectacularly wrong. But if he gets it right, we're heading in the right direction. And all the signs that you're hearing from the football club, all the signs that you're hearing from Paul Warren is that they have a plan in place. I don't think he's somebody to go a flash in the pan, like, oh, this guy's available, let's go do it. It's going to be on his list of targets. He's going to thought about it. He seems like he's someone who thinks things through at a deep level, which is something you want for a rebuild. But yeah, it was a very exciting season. Unfortunately, We wanted to talk to Dom a few weeks later on, but we're pleased that he was here with us today. Dom, thank you so much for your time over the last hour and 15 minutes or so talking about Derby County and reliving the exciting season. And before we finish, Dom, BBC Sports presenter, how do you spend your preseason? How do you spend your close season? And how are you preparing for next season? And again, sum up your whole experience through your first full year of doing this.
Well, firstly, we end up talking a lot about cricket. We end up talking about other sports a lot more.
You were with a famous boxer the other day. I saw you with the boxer pose. I got a little intimidated. I was like, ooh, don't want to meet Dom in a dark alley.
It was the baggy jeans, wasn't it, that did it?
you get the badge in, Dom? That's the thing these days, isn't it? Get the badge in.
I'm not cool enough to do that. But yeah, Sajid Abid was in the studio, one of our boxers that's got a fight on Saturday. He's the English mandatory challenger. So it's nice to go and explore these other sports whilst you get a break. But I'm also going to go on holiday as well, which will be nice, take a bit of a breather. But can't wait to get going again with it. Can't wait for the fixtures to be released. Can't wait for it all to start ticking along because, yeah, absolutely love it. And when it's not there, it feels a bit boring, doesn't it? But no, thank you so much for having me, guys. It's been a pleasure. And I love the work you guys do as well. And the content on social media is top stuff. So you're always welcome with us on Radio Derby as well. So thank you very much.
Yeah, appreciate that, Dom. Thank you very much for the kind words. And, you know, you've done a remarkable job this season, and it's great to see you living out your dream and not only living it, but excelling in it and continuing to push and have these great conversations. So it's been an absolute pleasure working with you over the past year. And with that, we'd just like thank everybody who listens to the podcast and supports us on social media for all your support this past year. We'll be putting a survey out. So if Dom or anybody else wants to share their opinions about how good or bad we are, you know, this is your opportunity to unsert me from the podcast panel. Good luck. Good luck with that. But yes, Jack, Jason, it's always a pleasure to talk with you guys and really appreciate the leaps and bounds we've made this season with the podcast. But Dom, thank you again for all the great insights for the past hour and so much and over the course of the season. You're a very good friend, and we look forward to talking with you more as the football calendar starts to turn into the new season. Jason, I'll leave you with the last final few words before the departing catchphrase.
Yeah, no, it's been a wonderful season in so many ways, a season that none of us probably 12 months ago expected to happen. And just to see the trials and tribulations of it. And I know I don't mean to end it on a downer, but somebody has to.
Got it. So it's going to be.
Well, yeah, no, yeah. So many people felt a little bit deflated last Sunday. And that's normally a negative feeling. But I see that as a positive because we'd still got a club here to care about.
The build up. Of this off, I'm so excited. It's off season. Sorry, I'm showing my Americanisms again. My apologies for those who are offended. The closed season, like the closed season, just it's so exciting going into it because it's going to be so exciting, and it's going to be so normal. Yeah. We can talk about normal things, not amortization and shady book deals, bookkeeping, and all this stuff. It's just going to be fantastic. So I'm excited, Jason. That's not a negative note. I think the deflation that we felt is something that we're pleased to have because we have a competitive football team. It would have sucked if we finished 18th and we were just like, nah, season's over. Thank God. Like the season's over and it went by with a whirlwind and it was just incredible. And you feel deflated. And that in and of itself was a positive because we were challenging for something. We were challenging to do something to play extra games to get into that postseason, which is remarkable.
Yeah. And I mean, we missed out very shortly points wise, but I think we all know as fans that the team itself wasn't probably as close as the points probably showed, but no, a great thing. And you know me, Corey, I'm a big fan of Football Manager, so it's going to be a bit of a Football Manager sort of summer. There's going to be a lot of changes. There's going to be a lot of players coming in.
Now we know who runs the accounts, Dom. He runs the
it's not me.
Accounts
it's
because
not
he's
me.
Like, oh,
it's
yeah, Haaland's cousin's coming to Derby. Because
yeah,
he's
far, are you?
Yeah, but I'm a big fan of the FM Manager, absolutely. So it's going to feel that kind of a summer. And like I say, from 12 months ago, where we did our end of the season review, we didn't realise we were still going to have a club. It's incredible to think. And a lot of people have kind of started saying now, well, that's in the past. And it is. And I think we have to move forward from it. But again, I think you've sort of got to look at it as well.
Yeah, it's an important inflection point.
Yeah, I think so. But
Dom,
that
before
is all...
I let you go, and before I let Jason finish, I see on your wall there, to those that are listening to a podcast, he is sitting in a room with posters on the back, and it says Formula One. So I got to ask you, are you fed up with Red Bull dominance for this Formula One season already? Because I'm completely fed up of it.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I'm a Ferrari man. So,
oh, you're a Ferrari guy. Okay, that's fine. Are you – favorite driver is what, Leclerc? Are you a Leclerc guy?
Yeah, Charles. And then, I wanted to back Lando as much as I could, but obviously his car's rubbish this season, so there's no point. But, Verstappen is just boring, isn't he?
Yeah, he just wins every week. My two favorite drivers, Lewis Hamilton, and then – something called ABV, which is anyone but Verstappen. So that is what I cheer for. But every time I turn it on, I'm like, yeah, he's like starting 19th. I'm like, well, he's going to win it. It's fine. He's only got 18 cars to pass. So by all means, Jack.
Thought as well, talking of all the sports. I think you can guess what I'm going to say here.
It's a new copy of the Pitch magazine's coming out, isn't it?
Yes, as you thought. We've got, exactly. I've got a big timeline on Andy Murray winning Wimbledon. In 2013, that's my contribution to that. That should be out any day now. So
I was there.
I remember that. He was very, very good. And then he had the hip surgery, not been able to recap.
I was there. I was at Wimbledon on Centre Court when he won it.
But yeah, we got mentions of all sorts. I even in the digital copy I've seen, I even managed to get a mention of the, the dog on CBBC that really likes Sue Barker. He popped up on some of the coverage. There's even mentioned about we covered all sorts. There was an injury crisis throughout the tournament. It goes over the whole 2 week period with Andy Murray and all the other goings on. And yeah, it was nice to look at some Scottish success for change.
I'm looking forward to reading that, Jack, because the movie Wimbledon was very below par when you look at it now. Like when it came out in the 90s, we're like, this is great. Now you look at it like this is garbage movie. So I will be on the lookout for that. That's Pitch Magazine. We'll tweet that out on our things because Jack Bryan here is making some big waves in the sport journalism thing. So we're very, very proud of Jack and his accomplishments. So Jason, time to end it with the catchphrase.
Yeah, it certainly is. I mean, fact, Dom, as I say, thank you very much for joining us. You've given us more than enough of your time, hour and a half to chew through the last 12 months. And obviously, I'm sure moving forward, we will catch up again. So thank you very much for your time.
No problem.
And Jack and Corey, this is the first one that you've done for a fair few weeks. You only turn up for the big ones. I mean, what can I say?
I am the James Chester of the podcast.
thank you very much for being a part of it again for another 12 months for the fourth year going, I think we are, something like that. And Jack, this year has obviously been a big year for you as well, joining us, and you've joined us on near enough every single episode. So thank you very much for your insights as well. It's been a brilliant journey over the last 12 months. And I'd like to say that maybe, just maybe, the next 12 months of this podcast will be a little bit better than the previous four, because we've had 4 years of absolute turmoil.
Oh, I thought you were going to get a new host. Sorry.
No. Unfortunately, I'm going to be still here.
We're all still going to be here. My contract is still going on. I thought you were, okay, we're going to talk about better Derby County times,
To say I started this the summer after we lost against Villa in the playoff final, and then since that, it's just
absolutely
we've never had any success on the podcast.
We've
never really had a lot of we've never really had a great to talk about. So I'm hoping the next 12 months is exactly what we can do. But yeah, that's it for this season. But we will have a couple more out over the summer, as always. A few bits and bobs. We'll keep in touch with all listeners. 22nd of June, I think it is, fixture release day. It's always a big one. Looking forward to it. But until then, thanks very much for all your efforts this year, everybody. Thanks for everybody who's listening. And as always, up the Rams. Thank you for listening to the Rams Review Podcast. Don't forget to like and subscribe to the podcast. And if you'd like to get in touch, we're on Twitter at RamsReview1, on Facebook, Rams Review Podcast. Drop us an email, ramsreview@hotmail.com. And until next time, up the Rams.